Hello and welcome to the Geekeroo Podcast. I'm Jeremy Pappas, alongside, as always, second and third runner-up for King Under the Mountain, Russell Jones, and Hobbit Breakfast Connoisseur, Mr. Adam Philpott. Guys.
I feel both the second and the third runner-up positions.
No, you're second, you're third. Adam is second, and as an aside, he's also a Hobbit
Breakfast Connoisseur. He's also the Breakfast Connoisseur.
Right.
Hey, the Denny's Hobbit Breakfast kicks ass. You guys go have that and tell me I'm wrong.
I'm seriously considering it. We talked about on the podcast last week about this whole podcast is going to be about The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, which we all saw. If you don't want to have spoilers for The Desolation of Smaug, then don't listen to this podcast until you watch it, and then listen to the podcast, because these are, in my opinion, some of our best efforts as far as podcasts are concerned, because we're all three, and sometimes all four, huge Tolkien heads. So it's a lot of fun. We talked about last week on the podcast that it's odd to hear Americans say Smaug, because it's smog, but when you're British and you say smog, you say Smaug. But when you're American, you just say smog. So it's kind of funny to hear, like, really, like, especially announcer-type folks say, The Desolation of Smaug. Because that's what they do. Listen to it every time. They so desperately try and say Smaug.
They kind of fuck it up a little bit.
A little bit. There's a Denny's is doing their Hobbit Breakfast thing again this year, and they have an announcer who also did it, which I referenced earlier, and we discovered that Adam was a big fan of the Hobbit Breakfast.
The Hobbit Hole Breakfast, if you're a fan of breakfast and cheese and bacon, then...
And who's not? I mean, cheese makes everything better.
Cheese makes everything better. Bacon makes everything better. Yeah. This has cheese and bacon, and it's breakfast, so you can't go wrong. Hobbit Hole Breakfast, had it last year, and I'm super excited that it's back at Denny's, and I will probably go back to Denny's for the first time since last year.
Yeah, I know. I've had multiple bad experiences at Denny's, it's to say nothing about Denny's. My mom actually worked at Denny's when I was really young, and I remember enjoying the food when I was there. But ever since then, I mean, the one in Fayetteville where Adam lives, I've had bad experiences at the one down here in Fort Smith. I don't know what it is. Maybe I just have like Denny's, whatever the opposite of karma is.
Bad Denny's
karma.
Yeah,
bad Denny's karma. That must be what it is.
All right, so we've been there and back again to all sorts of breakfast places.
In typical Hobbit fashion.
Let's dig straight in. First of all, let's start with generic overview of the movie, so we sort of know where we stand. I'll start with Russell. Russell, give me like Desolation of Smaug, dislike Desolation of Smaug, and comparison of Desolation of Smaug to Unexpected Journey.
Sure. I definitely a like. It was very good. It was a very fun time. I did not feel like it was 3 hours. It just moved, and that was really, really nice. The stuff that was added in was an improvement in most cases. Wasn't a big fan of Legolas. I thought you could have possibly have just chopped him out entirely and replaced him with nothing but Thoriel, and I would have been very happy. But other than that, I mean, just really, really good stuff overall. The stuff where you had Gandalf, you know, dealing with the whole necromancer side of the storyline, which, you know, it's like, oh, look, he's not actually the necromancer. He's, yeah, we know, we get it. That was actually pretty cool and was done, you know, decently well as far as, like, an addition to the story as opposed to just extra stuff tacked on to make the movie longer.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Town was great. I really enjoyed getting to go to Lake Town and spending time in Lake Town more than I did, you know, seeing the elves. Kind of because once you've seen one elf, you've seen most of the elves. And even though these elves were very, very, very different, because they're Mirkwood, Autumn elves, you know, Thranduil is wrong, or the – I think it's Thranduil. That's the
– Thranduil, yes.
Thranduil, yeah. The guy who's, you know, the king is just
– King of the dicks. I am Thranduil, all-powerful king of the dicks.
The guy with the elfiest eyebrows ever.
Yes.
Yeah. And the weird thing is that those eyebrows, they kind of, like, changed from woolly caterpillar to, you know, frosted, gorgeous mega eyebrows in, like, 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's obvious, you know, what he's in it for.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an interesting thing. In The Lord of the Rings, you had the dwarves who are being dicks about the elves, without very good reason. you know, Gimli was just like, never trust an elf, never trust an elf. Rawr! And then later you saw him kind of come around. Here, you're given very good reasons why the elves are, you know, kind of dicks.
And that's the reason.
They kind of are. And, you know, just overall, good movie. Better than The Hobbit, I would say. But still very much a Hobbit film, you know, as opposed to, you know, it's not going to rank above Return of the King. It's not going to rank above New Towers. But it is still, you know, a very, very, very good film.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Adam.
I enjoyed it. I'd say it's probably on about a par with an unexpected journey up until you get to the last quarter of the film. Because dragons make everything better. And they totally they aced Smaug in this film. He could not have looked better. He could not have sounded better. I love the way he moved. I love the way he interacted with Bilbo and just how dripping with evil he was. He was so fucking evil. It was great. Up until the last quarter of the movie, I would have put it on a par. I'd say the last quarter of the film stands out as pushing it over the edge. Mm-hmm. And above the first movie, but only because Smaug beats running through goblin caves.
And I tend to agree with that. I loved running through goblin caves. That was something that I really greatly enjoyed. I liked
what that didn't have? A dragon.
That's true. now, given, I really greatly enjoyed The Desolation of Smaug quite a bit. I put it maybe a notch above The Hobbit because I felt like the story, it's kind of similar to what we saw in The Lord of the Rings, in that the Fellowship of the Ring was great. The Two Towers was just incredible. I think because you have so much story to tell and you're really kind of getting all of your knots tied together, and it's really eye-opening to see how they put all of the different stories together. So that was something that I think pushed it over The Hobbit, just based on that's the facts of the movie. It's funny because in both The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, and The Desolation of Smaug, there's one scene, or you could argue, there's one scene in each movie that, in my mind, makes whatever you paid for the ticket, regardless what you thought of the rest of it, perfectly worth it. In Unexpected Journey, it's Bilbo and Gollum. In this movie, it's Bilbo and Smaug. It's just incredibly well done.
Those are the scenes that they changed the absolute least, or didn't change at all.
And those are some of the best scenes in my estimation from the book itself. I mean, I've gone on record multiple times as saying I don't have any problem with what they added in to make the movies I'll say pad it out, but not in a bad way, to pad out the movies to three movies. More Tolkien is better than less Tolkien, and we're not going to get more films. I mean, unless something really crazy weird happens, this is all we're getting. So I'm perfectly fine with throwing stuff in. I liked all the stuff with Dumbledore. Great. And Dumbledore is mentioned in The Hobbit. People tend to forget that. The Necromancer is mentioned in The Hobbit, very briefly. Yes.
Just don't follow Gandalf there. Exactly. And honestly, looking at it, I don't think that would have played on film. I don't think audiences would have been like, okay, so Gandalf just up and leaves and what?
Right. That works in The Lord of the Rings because you had so much other stuff going on.
Even in Lord of the Rings, they showed where Gandalf went when he went to Isengard, and then when he went to when he was fighting the Balrog.
Yeah,
and smote him upon the mountainside.
you see where he went, but you don't sort of get the whole story. Now I feel like we're getting kind of the whole story. I thought Dumbledore was done really well. I thought Mirkwood was done really well. The spiders were fantastic. I love the barrel run scene. It to me is even a step above the Goblin Warren scene from the first movie, and it was just. action-y goodness. Really well done, not super shaky cam transformery where you couldn't tell what the hell was going on. You got elves. I was perfectly fine having Legolas in the movie. I liked having him in the movie. He worked. You kind of got the tie-in with how the Mirkwood elves. I liked the whole thing with Keeley and the female elf whose name I have forgotten because he said it like twice.
Thoriel.
I liked that whole stuff. I was a fan of the movie. There were a couple things I didn't love. I liked that. One thing I really liked about this movie that I think is the reason critics pretty much across the board are saying it was better than An Unexpected Journey is that it had less slapsticky kind of humor than the first one did for obvious reasons. I mean, it's the second movie. We're getting a lot more serious. It's still a movie that your kids are going to love. But you're getting a lot more serious, so they cut out the some of the singing and throwing of plates and landing on top of one another and all that, which I think worked in the first movie, would not have worked as well here. Although, a solid film.
The whirling barrel dervish.
Yeah.
That was, I kind of like that they actually showed that Bomber wasn't just a buffling idiot.
Right.
In this movie.
That's what I thought too. That did seem a little kind of out of place, almost like Pirates of the Caribbean, like in a bad way, like the later Pirates of the Caribbean movies. A little, well, but I thought it worked well, and I did like that it showed that, you know what, as funny and as kind of bumbling as the dwarves seem, they're fucking badass. There's a reason that they're still alive and that they're going to take on a dragon, because they stand a slight chance.
Well, and one thing that kind of bothered me about the first movie, even though I liked the character of Boffer, which is the guy with the funky hat, he kind of took over Bomber's role, because Bomber in the book was kind of buddy-buddy with Bilbo, and he was real friendly, and, you know, kind of the guy who was, you know, helping him get along with everybody and keeping his chin up, and they relegated Bomber to, you know, fat, you know, comic relief, and that's really not who he was. Even though I was glad that they avoided the whole river scene in the woods where Bomber falls asleep and they're having to drag his chubby ass through the woods. Which would have, I they left out a lot of stuff that happened in Mirkwood, but I don't think any of it would have benefited the narrative.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
The Hobbit was written for a different audience. You have a lot of stuff like that in there. I was glad to see some of that kind of thrown by the wayside for the benefit of the stuff that they added in.
Balin actually seems like the dwarf that has, you know, taken to Bilbo the most, and that Bilbo is also kind of taken to as well, especially in this one, because he's the one who's sticking up for Bilbo most of the time and reminding Thorin, you know, dude, don't be a dick.
Yeah. He's the
guy with the white beard.
He's
the one who remembered, you know. He kind of sees a little bit of a mentory figure, and when Gandalf leaves, he kind of fills that role.
Balin is I believe it was in the Two Towers. It's Balin's tomb that they fight the troll in.
Yeah, which is really sad.
No,
yeah.
That happens quite a few years down the road. So,
this actually brings up an interesting point. Macy was telling me, and I think you probably heard this since you were in the same theater as her. People were like audibly relieved when Legolas got saved, or when
Like,
guys, these people are going to die. That's not a spoiler,
right?
Their fates are kind of sealed.
Right. Well, on the flip side of that coin, when it was kind of funny and telling when the orc shoots the arrow at Legolas and the arrow is deflected, you heard a lot of people going, Well, I'm like, he's in the Lord of the Rings!
Yeah.
He can't die! That's like when Gandalf's getting the hell beat out of him by the Necromancer. Spoiler alert, it's Sauron. That's hardly a spoiler. Everybody knows that. He was on the Hill of Sorcery actually is a thing that happened in the Second Age where Sauron took it over from the Sylvan Elves. Everyone was like, I'm like, he's in the movie. He can't die. Bilbo can't die. As far as you know, never having read the books, and Gandalf can't die.
Yeah.
Yep. Look at they can't. They're in the next movie. You've seen them.
There's a few people who are safe, and those are them.
Right. Yep. Everybody yep. else can potentially die.
Their contracts are negotiable.
Right.
And since we know at this point that Gimli is born, even Glowing could die.
That's true. That right. is that is definitely true. You could yep. lose all the dwarves.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Except for Balin, because he has to die.
He has to have a tomb. And who is it that's next to his tomb holding the book?
Biffer of Offer, or?
I don't recall. It's one of them.
It's one of the ones that everyone's like, oh, and he's so nice. And Macy was talking about it. How she's like, it's so sad when you realize he's the one holding the book.
Yeah. Yeah, that's him. Let's go through sort of major scene by major scene. Spiders was done, in my opinion, really well. I know it really freaked people like Russell out. I like the whole spider thing. I like that we're seeing the ring used a lot more, which goes along with the Hobbit. But it's interesting to see him using the ring and it's funny now, and I think that people who haven't read the books are getting the same feeling, because I read the Hobbit before I read the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, as did I.
So it's kind of funny now, having seen the Lord of the Rings and having seen him putting the ring on and taking it off. Does anyone else get like really, really nervous? Like, no, you shouldn't put that on.
Yeah,
take it off. Remove it.
It's kind of like imagine instead of whenever he takes the ring off and he's like, do I put it on or don't I put it on? He's wrapping a rubber tube around his arm, tapping his elbow, and, you know, pulling out a horse-sized syringe and debating which vein to go for. It's like, dude, this is a bad idea! Yeah.
But it's great that he doesn't know that.
No, yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of fun to see him use the ring, knowing that later on it's going to be something that that is not super great for him. The barrel run scene I really liked. Obviously the Smaug scene I really liked. The only thing about the barrel run scene that I didn't like that kind of annoyed me was the little bit of movie fan service they did with the fact that Legolas couldn't go two steps without sliding on something.
Yeah.
You get it?
But
slid on stuff.
Toriel did it as well, along with one or two other elves. But yes, it was, you know, you had to have a sliding. Okay, this brings up a solid point. Sometimes, and this is honestly, if I had a chief overall gripe of the movie, this is what it would be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it felt like we weren't watching The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, and we're instead watching the greatest Lord of the Rings hits of Peter Jackson. Because there were a handful of things that got a little bit reused. Orlando Bloom sliding on stuff. Take a drink, you know?
But how else are we supposed to know that elves are nimble?
And someone getting healed with Athelas.
Yeah.
Take a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had that moment of, you know, slow-mo elven speech, and then the elf begins to glow, and the person getting healed. You know, that whole thing was basically just straight ripped from... It was good when it worked with Frodo in the first movie. Mm-hmm. Bringing it back again... And there were a couple of other moments, and there were a few times when running through, I think it was when they were pausing at the bridge under the mountain, I thought, of course, it's in a dwarven thing, we're gonna have a bridge, and there's gonna be a bridge thing, because dwarves and bridges, like in, you know, the mines.
Right.
Yeah. They also seem to have completely dropped the whole, orcs aren't supposed to be moving around in daylight.
Daylight.
Thing.
Yeah,
because the orcs in this didn't seem to have any issue with daylight, and that was supposed to be one of the big things about the Uruk-hai, right? They were supposed to be able to move through daylight, and that was what made them the badassiest of the orcs. And these were just plain Jane, you know, stinky orcs, and they didn't have any problem moving through daylight. So, yeah, there are some inconsistencies between the film and Tolkien lore that are somewhat annoying to people like you guys and myself, but honestly, your average moviegoer isn't going to be like, well, wait a minute, in the Two Towers, didn't they say that the Uruk-hai could move through daylight and that was what made them so special? And I don't know why I made the average moviegoer Sean Connery just then. But
I personally had a bit of a problem with Orlando Bloom just jumping willy-nilly across those little fat children's heads.
You're the man now, dog.
I had a couple of issues with, with the barrel scene. One, not so much an issue as an observation, but the GoPros were...
Dude, just use GoPros!
Interesting choice. But the thing, the only problem I had with the GoPros is they stood out as being, we filmed this with a GoPro.
A little bit, and... I think part of that has to do with the fact that that GoPro has become a thing, and yes. GoPros are so inexpensive that we're seeing that sort of stuff a lot. Yeah. Eventually, I think someone is going to make like a $20,000 version of the GoPro that you can use to film things, and it will shoot in a film quality, and we'll kind of lose that whole thing. But I understand using the perspective. I'm kind of 50-50 on it.
I get it, but it felt like Ori slapped a camera to the side of his barrel and then went home and uploaded the video on Facebook.
That's true.
That's kind of how it felt. The other problem I had with the barrel scene is they were all, and I know they wanted it so that they could have it more actiony, because if you just, you know, close up a bunch of doors and some barrels and have them float downstream like in the book, that's not going to be fun, but riding around in a barrel upright is not going to keep you afloat for very long.
It's not going to keep you afloat for very long if you're moving around nearly a tenth of as much as they were. You could just sit there and float. That wouldn't really be too huge.
If you're doing it on a very lazy river,
right,
and you stay very still,
yeah, you can't. You couldn't do it in rapids.
Then you can do it fine, but you can't do it in rapids because those barrels are going to fill up with water,
right, pretty quickly. And
to be fair, I also had issues with the physics in Star Trek. So
yeah,
you know, I get a little annoyed when physics are ignored.
Yeah, physics were definitely ignored a bit in this scene in particular.
Which, if they had said they were magic barrels, I would have been, oh, okay. So they're magic barrels, fine.
Well, they are, and I hate to be this guy, and I'm only saying this facetiously, but they are elven barrels. Right?
They're elvish barrels in that they are most physically appropriate for whatever acrobatics you have to pull off at that moment.
And
if you have to roll so that you can do the whole rolling, running thing on it, then they do so.
They could do that.
Yeah. If they have to twist and turn so that you can, you know, pull a box step, then okay.
If they have to turn into inopportune armor so you can bash orcs.
Whirling barrel Dorvish.
Which Dorvish, nice. Yeah, that was kind of Pirates of the Caribbean-y and not in really super a good way. But I liked that Bomber was not seen as this big, fat, stupid idiot. And he was like, oh, you know, we should remind everybody that the dwarves are actually really fucking awesome. To a point where if they were to go against the elves man-to-man, the ending of this tale has not been predetermined, because dwarves are pretty badass.
They do kind of gloss over the fact that dwarves are supposed to be competent,
right?
Because a lot of the last movie and almost all of this movie up until they get to the mountain is
right.
They get caught, they escape only to get caught again.
And especially in this movie, and I understand why it was done, but especially in this movie, they escape without really doing it themselves. They escape from the spiders because of the ring. They escape from the elves because of the ring. They escape from the orcs because of the elves. So, you know, they're able to get into Lake Town because of Bard. So,
and they only get out of Lake Town because of Stephen Fry.
That's true. And his little band. It was good to see Stephen Fry in as the master of Lake Town. I know Russell really liked all the Lake Town stuff. I did too. I thought it was, you know, it was very Harry Potter-esque to me, the way it was set up, the way things sort of moved around, the way things were like we're used to seeing them, but not quite. There was that little tweak. It kind of made it Harry Potter-esque to me. I'm not a massive Harry Potter film fan. I don't think I've even seen all of them. But I liked that touch. It's the first time we've ever seen a city of men that was just a kind of a normal city of men. It was not
the massive towering
of Rohan or the White House
of Gondor.
Right, or Gondor. It was the first time we'd seen a city of men that was just a city of men, and I like the way it looked.
I don't know, Bree was just supposed to be kind of your average, you know.
Yeah, but in the first movie, we didn't really see anything of Bree except for the stables and the prancing pony.
Did we all notice the very obvious carrot?
Oh, director cameo at the very beginning of the fucking movie.
Oh, yeah.
The first person you see is Peter Jackson. How huge balls does it take to do that? That's like he just walks through. It's like, enjoy my movie.
To do it almost the exact same way he did it in The Hobbit. Or not The Hobbit, in Fellowship of the Ring.
Well, he was in The Lord of the Rings. He was in all three movies, wasn't he?
I know he was in...
Because he was
in
Soldier.
He was kind of the same thing in Fellowship of the Ring that he was in this one. In Two Towers, I think he was at the Battle of Helm's Deep as sword fodder.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was on one of the pirate ships in the third movie when Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli kind of take over the pirate ships all the dead people.
I believe you're right.
And for the record, I pulled that out of my ass, so I think
that's pretty good.
Some points.
That's pretty good. Definitely, you get points. You can go to Denny's after this and have a Hobbit Hole breakfast.
Yay!
You have my permission.
It is about time for second breakfast.
It is. It's getting there. It's 12:30 as we're recording this. Now you know that we're recording this at 12:30. One thing that hasn't really been mentioned, but I enjoyed a lot was seeing Beorn, who we last saw in The Lord of the Rings at the very end of the Return of the King, actually in the battle with kind of in the background.
Was he?
Yeah. You see
Are
a huge
sure
bear.
About
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You see a huge... There's a scene where you see, like, in the background, there's this huge bear tearing something apart. And
it's just all of a sudden there's a bear in the back, like, well, you guys fucking love cocaine, I fucking love cocaine,
The number one threat to Middle Earth.
Bears! They don't make a huge deal about it, but he is in the background of one of the scenes, just tearing ass, as he was in this movie. I'm a big fan of bears, so I've always had a thing kind of for Beorn, so it was nice to see him sort of doing his thing. I'd really sad to hear a story about hating dwarves, but hating orcs even more. So it was good.
Did you like the dramatic music when he picked up that mouse?
And everyone's like, oh, God, he's going to eat it.
He's not going to eat the mouse? Are you not paying attention?
They're paying attention to the music, not what's being said.
Tell me about the reaction in your theater, because we all went to different theaters. When the dwarves, they uncase the statue of the king, and then it starts to melt, and then it overcomes Smaug, and he's screaming and trying to get away from this molten gold. And in my theater, you could audibly hear people like, yeah, fuck that guy, I'm glad he's dead. And then the sound starts flying away, and people are just dead silent. They're like, wait a minute, that was supposed to kill him. And I'm thinking, Simon, nope, this does not kill the Schmarrow Hungry.
No, it was an interesting thing to happen. I probably was still too busy paying attention, wrapping my head around how we got there, because for some reason when they were lighting the forges, I thought that was all just, you know, iron and steel. Like, I thought at some point they were going to pull a lever and he was going to be coated with, like, iron, not gold. And then to have him
standing
thought
they were
going to
Alien 3 Smaug, right? That's
something like
what
that,
I thought they
but
were going to do.
Instead, they first
but
instead, season of Game of Thrones.
The Game of Thrones. And see, there were a crap ton of kids in my theater, unfortunately. It wasn't as bad, especially because I was in the front, way insulated from them. But it was so quiet through most of it that I thought, holy crap, have they all seen Game of Thrones? They're little jaded bastards. But when you realize he wasn't standing on a statue and was actually standing on a mold, I was kind of like, wait a minute. Where did they just suddenly get this big-ass mold from? And that was just, you know, filled with – it was just – I was still trying to wrap my head around it. While the rest of me is like, just go with it. Just forget about it. Don't –
Well, no. That wasn't a big problem. To me, you see – I mean, they were undoubtedly creating these statues for some reason.
Right.
When Smaug came in. Molds are meant to be fireproof. They're molds.
Yeah.
All that stuff is still going to exist. The fact that they just kind of kick-started the forges – and they had this whole process together.
The forge thing was cool. It was great. I was a fan. I was like, yeah, this, you know, all of this makes a lot of sense. Again, as you know, yeah, sure. And then they got to the mold itself, and just it just, eh. I don't know why I had a specific problem with it.
I had no problem with that. I was kind of wondering. I didn't realize it was a mold until they had kicked away, until they had kicked over the stuff.
Tanked everything.
I thought they were just going to drop this big statue on him.
Yeah.
And then they knocked the mold pieces apart, and I was like, oh, that's what the whole plan was to begin with.
But that's the thing. How could it have been a whole plan if they haven't been here? And they didn't – I mean, how would they have known, oh, there's a mold in the Giant King's Hall that was never finished? Well, we'd never talk
fair,
about
Thorin
it.
Thorin and Balin both had been there mm-hmm. when Smaug arrived and drove them out. So they could have been like, hey, you remember that giant-ass mold we were going to make of Thror when Smaug inconveniently showed up and ruined all of our gold?
Well, you also have to think about it this way. This might not have been the first of those statues that they made.
Oh yeah,
they may have made several of those statues. So if they had been working on these statues for the past years or 2 years or so, and were casting all these gold statues, because something that big would probably take months to fully cool and harden, so you'd have to leave it there. I don't know.
Which I'm still trying to kind of figure. You know, so what they did was they had the mold, they had the forges fired up, they poured gold into the mold, and it had just enough time to set. For the 5 seconds that Smaug's looking at it like, you know, he's about to just have a goldgasm, and then it just falls apart because it's not fully set.
That's essentially what happened.
Yeah. And it's just I still don't know why I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain. Like, there's something in my brain that's like, come on. And I can't articulate fully why.
There's the part of it that is a little hard to buy is that the mold would set even that small amount that quickly, granted. However, I think it kind of lends credence to what happened before. If you see the process that they were going through, it wasn't just like, oh, well, this just happened to happen, and this just happened to happen, and oh, this did this here. Like, they were on what's essentially an assembly line for this big, huge gold statue. So
they actually had an idea. So
right.
It wasn't just them, you know, trying to see whatever they could do to Smaug to try to kill it. Although I don't know what the general idea was behind, hey, let's try to cover a dragon with melted gold, because dragons are super susceptible to fire.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I kind of thought that same thing, though at the same time, it's not really fire so much as it's molten metal. True. And I mean, Smaug can be killed by a black arrow, which is just a specially forged ballista bolt.
Let's talk about that for 2 seconds. Someone was asking me, it's like, so, you know, with Bard and everything, you know, he's got, I mean, you see him with the bow and this big arrow, the thing, and I'm like, yeah, but you have to go into this thinking that, you know, Bard, and I was doing air quotes for each of these words, Bard and shooting and black arrow and even bow, maybe they're concepts that you can play with in movie world.
Right. I think it makes more sense to make it a ballista than it does to make it. I don't recall, was it a ballista bolt in
the
Hobbit,
in
or was
the book,
it just an arrow?
Just straight
in the
up
book,
arrow.
It was just an arrow. Yeah. It was a black. Yeah. It was
and
a black
Bard
arrow.
Was just a fucking badass.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me a whole lot. I kind of liked seeing that side of it. Probably
that he turned
wise,
into a spice rack.
Or a potholder. My favorite moment in the movie, story wise, is the moment when the dwarves get out and they rob the armory and they're trying to get away and they run all the way up to, or they're captured and taken all the way up to the steps of the master's house, and the master comes out and Bard steps behind them. And what you have at this point is the master, who's a dickhead. He's not the biggest dickhead in the movie. That would be Thranduil, king of the dickheads.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be Smaug, though? Just in sheer size, he is the biggest dickhead.
True, he is the biggest dickhead. But
Thranduil's got like an entire crown of dicks.
That's just true. He does have a crown of dicks because he's a dickhead.
Think about it, Smaug's entire head is roughly shaped like a dick.
That frill is kind of phallic.
Everybody's a dickhead.
And between the two of them, which one do you think would actually pull it off? You know, the actor play Thranduil or Bandersnatch Cumberbund?
Phrasing.
Pull it off. So you're stuck with this great moment, in my opinion. You're stuck with this great moment where the dwarves are like, let us go. And the master, who you don't like already, they made certain you didn't like him.
Yes.
And the master's like, and then you have Bard going, no, we can't let them go because they'll wake the dragon. And you're kind of thinking, you know what? Bard kind of has a point.
Yeah.
And then the master's like, and you're like, well, it's kind of hard. I mean, it definitely gave me kind of a quandary. It's like, obviously, I know what's going to happen. Well, I guess I didn't super know what was going to happen. I didn't know if that was how they were going to get to the mountain, or if they were going to, like, escape from jail or something. But they had already done that. So I figured they were going to be good with it. And I'm like, Bard has a point. Bard's not a bad guy here. So we have to trust that the bad guy does what is essentially the wrong thing. You kind of root for the bad guy to do the dickhead thing, which is, sure, let the dwarves go, and then they'll probably get eaten by the dragon. And if they're not eaten by the dragon, then I'll be super rich. When in all reality,
Bard's...
It's
kind of a similar thing to how Beorn felt, in that the master doesn't particularly like the dwarves, but he hates Bard more.
Right, exactly. And that, to me, was a really great story moment.
The chances of my town being burned to a crisp seem awfully tempting, but then again, I can stick it to that damn Bard smuggler.
Which, they made...
Capital idea!
Capital! I love the idea! So I liked that we were stuck in that kind of moral quandary of saying, the master should probably do what we expect a master to do, which is just to be a dick.
Be greedy.
And say, fuck all those people with their food and their places to sleep and their tiny concerns giving me gold. And it was good that he did that, and that was something that was fully manufactured for the movie.
Yeah.
Which I think gives credence to the fact that these movies are being well done despite everyone complaining about, oh, but that wasn't in The Hobbit, and that wasn't in The Hobbit's a short book. And
it also establishes a bit about, you know, what's going to be happening in the next film, which I think we should really talk about, because first off, that ending.
Oh, yeah. That ending was beautiful.
Was anyone else just, you know, when it went to black and it stayed in black for like 3 seconds, and you're like, oh, shit, no, he didn't.
No,
and then all of a sudden, the credits roll, and everyone's kind of sitting around like, what?
Going into it and seeing where the trailers had happening, I fully expected it to end with Smaug leaving the mountain and heading towards Lake Town, and that'd be it.
Yeah, that was my expectation.
Precisely the point where I expected the movie to end.
Yeah, and it was really...
The people behind me, on the other hand, they seemed rather taken aback.
Yeah.
They're like, what? No!
Part of it was I was fully expecting them to spend more time in Lake Town than in the mountain. Like, I expected you to get some with Bilbo and Smaug, and then Smaug goes to Lake Town, and then there's, you know, the big climactic thing is over Lake Town. Because now that Smaug is kind of out and flying, how much of the next film are they going to take up with Smaug and Lake Town? Because you still have the Battle of the Five Armies that has to happen, right?
Yeah, so you're basically going to have two major set pieces in the next movie.
I think you get three major set pieces, because you're going to have Lake Town and Smaug, you're going to have the Battle of the Five Armies, and you're going to have to deal with the Necromancer, and you're going to have to deal with the Necromancer in a big way. Yep. I think people have mentioned that there probably wasn't somewhere in one of the extra books something about the Siege of Dun Mulog, or whatever it is?
Dol Guldur?
Dol Guldur.
Not really. The only siege of Dol Guldur that you really hear about is in the Second Age, when Sauron takes it from the Sylvan Elves, who actually, it's interesting when you think about the Thranduil and the whole scene with Thranduil talking to the female elf chick whose name Evangeline Lilly's character. Considering...
It's Toriel.
Yeah, Toriel. Yeah. Considering Thranduil's father was the ruler of the Sylvan Elves, I was like... but Thranduil is that much of a dick.
He's casting shade on that.
No. I know my dad ruled your people, but no. Not a big fan.
So, you and your red hair are beneath me.
Yeah. Evangeline Lilly, who I'm not really a huge fan of as an actress, did a fine job, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I think I'm not a huge fan of her just because of her association with Lost. And really, I can't be a fan of anything associated with Lost.
That's kind of me, too.
But yeah. You had a hobbit in Lost.
Yeah, but, and apparently you also had an elf in Lost. And you know what was good about Lost? The first season. You know what was not good about Lost? Everything else.
The tower is, or the place is called Dol Guldur. It's that's the Hill of Sorcery in Sundarin. And the thing that actually happened was not really what happened in the books. In the books, he just stays there. Sauron does. And then it goes into, because the War of the Ring happens not too far from there, actually. So what you're likely going to see is Gandalf just gets away, and he says something along the lines of, "Hey, we know Sauron has a stronghold here now. We should maybe look into that." And that'll
what'll
be the
probably
end of the
happen
movie.
Is Saruman will be like, "Oh, poo poo,
yeah, no, that wasn't Sauron. You're a crazy old man. You're as crazy as that Radagast."
Dude, I saw him turn into the fucking eye.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. But yeah, in the books, there's never a Gandalf at Dol Guldur. That Dol Guldur is just a thing. It happens. It is the reason Mirkwood gets overrun by orcs and Nazgul and spiders and all the terrible shit that's going on that they had to deal with. And it isn't until after Sauron is defeated that Galadriel goes over and decides, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and take Dol Guldur back, and we can call it the Naked Hill again," which sounds like a really great place to go to Elven College. So that's sort
sounds,
of why
sounds where like Elven Lilith Fair happens.
Yeah, Elven Lilith Fair. You mean Elven Society? Sorry. That stuff will be taken care of in the next movie. I fully expect them to. So I don't think they'll spend as much time on Dol Guldur there as they had, or maybe Gandalf will do something to make it seem like he's defeated Sauron at Dol Guldur. And then Sauron just, like, pops up at the end and is like, "Maha, I just hit the whole time." Maybe something completely different, but that's sort of what we can expect. That or something completely different.
I mean, Gandalf basically has to get away, and then he'll show up at the Battle of the Five Armies like he did in the book.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't expect him to be back at the mountain anytime just yet. I'm willing to bet what's going to happen is we're going to have it's going to open up with either Gandalf at Dol Guldur, and they're going to resolve that or at least get Gandalf out of there right off the bat. Or they're going to start it off with the Battle of Lake Town and just kick it off, you know, full gear, you know, dragon fighting and all the gloriousness that we expect. And then it's going to be a lot of politicking and a lot of talks and a lot of stuff that you get in the downtime in Two Towers and Return of the King. And then it's gonna ramp up to the Battle of the Five Armies, and then we'll get the denouement of Bilbo going back and getting the little trunk of gold out of the troll's den and getting back home and telling the Sackville Bagginses to get the fuck out.
See, I think his return to I really hope they do that well, because I think his return is going to be something that we'll want to see and will really color who Bilbo is that we saw in the first movie in the Lord of the Rings. It'll really color who we saw then, because when you start off with the Hobbit, Bilbo makes Frodo look like evil Knievel. Bilbo is he's kind of, I hate to say matronly, but he's almost matronly. He's there. He's kind of prim and proper. "Don't put your feet on my thing. I'm not going anywhere. I'm happy to just have my routine and die eventually."
Who he is and why the casting for Bilbo is so perfect is Bilbo is Arthur Dent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bilbo and Arthur Dent are essentially the same guy at the beginning of their respective stories, which is why it's kind of great that they're both played by the same person.
Right.
But, yeah, he starts out and he wants to drink tea and smoke tobacco and kick back.
He wants to be the hobbitiest hobbit that ever hobbited.
Hobbited,
right?
Yep,
right.
That's what he wants to be, and then Gandalf shows up, and the whole thing happens.
The only adventure he wants to take is to Denny's.
Yep. For their delicious hobbit hole breakfast. Now just $6.99. I swear we were not being paid by Denny's. Unless,
however, if Denny's wants to pay me in hobbit hole breakfast,
free hobbit.
Have your people call my people.
And my people is me.
My people is me, and we will take all of the hobbit hole breakfasts.
Yeah.
I don't know if you stuck around for a little while or what you did, but the song over the end or over the end credits?
I listened to the first part of it. I kind of wanted to get out of there because I hadn't peed.
Yeah.
And I was at the point where my back teeth were floating. So,
Russell, you kind of gave me that Russell doesn't approve noise.
it's like this. The words and kind of the whole idea behind the song and I guess, you know, the theme or the whatever totally did not match up with the presentation, you know?
The presentation of the song or the presentation of
just the song in general. Like it was, you know, this whole kind of light, almost slightly ballady, you know, folksy guitar-y type thing that started off like that. And I really wanted, like, an all men's 120 voices thundering in harmony kind of chorus talking about, you know, we will die together, we will burn in fire, we will blah blah. It's like, no, I don't want to hear this on a stage surrounded by a whole bunch of, you know, baked out of their mind music festival goers.
Well, do you know who sings the song?
I have no idea who sings the song.
It's Ed Sheeran, who is from England, and he was on Taylor Swift's album, and he's written songs for One Direction. Ed Sheeran.
Still wrong kind of style and presentation.
See, I mean, from what I heard of it, I didn't stick around and listen to it forever. But from what I heard of it, I kind of liked it. I'm actually going to find it and listen to it, probably later today. And I will find a link on YouTube and post on the podcast page so you can take a listen to it. Doing so won't spoil the movie, though if you're still listening, you've probably seen the movie already. But take a look at it and let us know through the podcast page. Shoot us an email or a tweet. Let us know what you think about the song at the end. And, maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It's called I See Fire. As in I space S-E-E, not like icy fire, like icy hot.
I see fire, I see rain.
I see some days that I thought would never end.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All right, let's get down to brass tacks. Give me final thoughts on The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
I think, like The Two Towers, this is going to be one that I came away from kind of going mildly interested, and then over time, I'm going to continue to warm to it. Because when I first saw The Two Towers, you mentioned those moments that you see the movie and you're like, oh, this is going to make the movie for me. With The Two Towers, it was the very first 5 minutes where Gandalf was falling and fighting the Balrog. Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie, I kind of didn't care for at first, but as time went on, I really warmed The Two Towers. Like, no, I really like The Two Towers a lot. I think I'm going to be the same way with this. I really enjoy it. I have a feeling that the next movie might just wind up blowing it all out of the water. But I think over time...
Blowing it all out of the water in a bad way?
Or no, good.
Okay.
Good. Kind of like Return of the King. Return of the King came in, and I was just like, you know, just big, massive expanses of, oh my God, this is awesome. You know, Two Towers, it was better in different ways. And I think that this one is going to... I think Desolation of Smaug is going to, over time, I'm going to shine even more to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say that the one thing, the biggest thing that Peter Jackson and company had to do going into this was stick the landing with the dragon. They had to make the dragon look good. They had to make the dragon sound good. They had to make it seem realistic and realistically menacing. And honestly, they stuck the landing with the dragon. I was thoroughly pleased with the film. I can't wait to see the next one. Despite a few nitpicky things about the film that I would have improved on or left out or otherwise changed, I think the film did really well, and I can't wait to watch it again, which I will do before too long.
As for me, greatly, greatly enjoyed the film. I felt that it was better than The Hobbit. I don't think it's up to the standard of The Lord of the Rings, though I don't think it could possibly have been up to the standard of The Lord of the Rings. And the only thing I have to say is next December, I was under the impression that this movie was going to come out in July. Turns out, no, it is coming out next December.
Oh, really? I'd heard the other way.
Yeah, I had too, but according to IMDb, the next film, The Hobbit, There and Back Again, comes out December 17th, 2014.
Huh.
So I had heard July too, but from what we're hearing now, or from what it says on IMDb, December 17th. And I will be looking forward to December 17th quite a bit because I really like this trilogy. I know that it's getting some flack for, I think the vast majority of the flack that it's getting is because it's not The Lord of the Rings.
Well, I think it's also catching some flack just because Lord of the Rings was 3 books and they made 3 movies, and
right.
The Hobbit is 1 book and they're making 3 movies out of it. So I think a lot of people just feel like it's being inflated to the point where it's cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, honestly, could they have done it in 2 movies? Yes, they could have. Could they have done it in 1 movie? I don't think so. Not unless they really, really dumbed down the story. But they could have left out a lot of stuff and made it into 2 movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where it's catching a lot of flack is I think there's kind of this... Especially since they've done it with, they did it with Harry Potter, and they did it with, what's the fucking chick flick vampire series? Twilight.
Twilight.
Where they're, like, just taking the last book and trying to milk the fuck out of it and make 2 movies out of the last book, which I think with Harry Potter it was justified. With Twilight, I didn't see any of those,
well,
so...
No. With Twilight, they made, what, 5 Twilight movies?
However many books they made, there was 1 more.
Yeah, so...
So if it was 3 books, it was 4 movies.
I believe there were 4 books.
Okay.
I don't know, you guys are talking about something, and all I'm hearing is wah, wah, wah.
I don't think anyone comparing The Hobbit to Twilight is doing anybody justice. And some people will. Some people are. They're saying not doing as, you know, they're essentially twilighting, which isn't the case. They added enough
stuff. I'm not comparing Twilight to The Hobbit as far as content or capability of the filmmakers or author goes. I'm just comparing it as insofar as the general state of the film industry.
Right, absolutely. And there are people who compare it, to, having never seen the movie, and say, oh, I'm not going to see that because it's basically the twilighting of The Hobbit, and that's not the case. You get a lot of extra stuff. The vast majority of the extra stuff is really good. And it's all a bonus. Like I've said multiple times, more Tolkien is better than less Tolkien, with very, very few exceptions. So that's fantastic. As always, our music is Op Prop featuring Esset. Check them out on uhort.no. Check us out on Twitter. We are at GIR Podcast. You can also shoot us an email to girpodcast@gmail.com. For Russell and Adam, this is Jeremy. Thanks for listening.
Time for second breakfast. Off to Denny's.